So welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. It's your main host here, Marcel. I just came back from the Mile High City from GP Denver, so you know I'm feeling real bountiness. It was snowing out there, so I got a colder taste than GP Montreal. But we got other people here, the not so main co-hosts. We'll start down the line. We got Ryan Bushard here.
Yeah, the not so main co-host number one.
And then we got not so main co-host number two, Corbin Hostler.
At least I'm not number three.
Yeah, because last and definitely least, we got Jason Ewald.
I think it's fine that Corbin's number two because he's number two.
Yeah, the middle child always gets forgotten, right?
If you're not first, you're last.
All right.
Okay.
He just gave us an order, Corbin. You're just angry that you're not first runner-up. That's okay.
I feel like I've heard that main host, sub-host thing on another podcast, but I'll let it go.
Nobody listens to that cast, though.
It's true.
I don't listen to it, that's for sure.
You don't even listen to this podcast.
I accidentally did the other day.
He accidentally did.
No, who does listen to this podcast? Our listeners, and they would love to hear us.
Well, yeah, like it wasn't even bad. I woke up and I was like, you know what? I want to hear Jason's like thing from the beginning of the last episode. So I turned it on and then I just, for the next hour, I didn't work up the energy to actually get out of bed. So I accidentally listened to it.
Was that your first actual whole episode of Brainstorm Brewery you listened to, Corbin?
Yes. It truly was. Wow. Aside from how I listen to them every week when we record them.
Wow.
See, listeners, you guys are much better than Corbin. See, you guys
I'm here right now. I literally am hearing everything they're going to hear.
He keeps saying this like that's the relevant part of all this. No, Corbin, we're going to keep giving you shit week in and week out because that's what we can do.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's not the same after it gets edited. Like, we're here right now, but sometimes when we're here right now, it gets cut the fuck out, and then then it's somewhere else.
Yeah, like our cast sounds like what you know, Corbin. You're like, I don't know why people listen to us. It's because they don't listen to us like this. They listen to the actual edited cast that Marcel does that sounds great and not this garbage that we record right now.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So GP Denver was an awesome experience.
Did you play Magic, Marcel?
Yeah, I got to play in the main event.
What did you play?
I played Cube.
I don't follow.
Well, someone was going to let me borrow a deck and it turned out they didn't show up in time. And so I built a deck out of my cube. I looked at all the standard cards I had in the cube and then put something together and had a singleton deck.
I don't know that I believe you.
I got pictures on Twitter and everything.
Marcel's went just crazy enough to do something like that.
You went 5-4 with a singleton deck?
Yep. Red, white, singleton.
Wow, I'm so proud of you, Marcel. Like, before I was going to make fun of you, but jeez.
I didn't know that.
They take balls just to show up with that deck.
Yeah.
I'm trying to verify that this is true. Give me a minute.
I'm just going to allow it. I'm not going
to
question it.
There's no reason for me to lie about this. Why would I lie to you? I was sitting there staying at Conley's house, and, the day before with Harry. Like, right there, it was like an hour before the event. I was like, I was even contemplating then. I was like, because I didn't know if the guy was going to show up, and then I didn't want to play blue-white control. I was like, I didn't know if this was going to be the best deck anyway. So I was going to audible to that if that was the case, and it worked out. It was like a red-white deck. I didn't get all the cards. There's some cards that I wish I had. Like, I had a Brim as, but it was a proxy. So that would have been a good addition to have in the cube, and I didn't have Stoke the Flame. But I had Elspeth, I had Sarkins. A lot of
I found your list. I'm looking at it. This is actually awesome.
So I tightened it up. So I got it on Modo.
Wait, how did you find his list?
It's on Twitter, like you said.
Oh, okay.
It's true.
Got featured. Yeah, I like how that's the thing you call him out on, Corbin, and not like, oh, I stayed at Conley's place. Like, no. No, clearly the fact that he played a singleton event.
He probably did say
that. I believe
that. No, I know, I know, but like that's like, if we're going on things that you should doubt, I feel like that's
I didn't doubt that at all. However, Marcel did play a certain bird soldier. It's a 3-4 flyer.
Yes.
Actually, it would have won me a game if I didn't get scumbagged per se. Seriously.
Wow, okay.
If you'd have top eighted with that card and like won the FOGO bet that way, like hats
if
off.
If you
to
had
him,
day two'd with this list, you would have been my hero. This is legitimately a singleton deck. There's like Lightning Servant, Ember Swallower, like High Sentinels of Arashin. Oh my gosh.
I got a turn for Elspeth with the Servant Generator.
Oh my gosh.
And won that game. He had a look at the card. He was like, wait a minute, I thought it was only creatures. No, it's all mana, baby.
Oh my god. I'm so happy.
There's a Soldier of the Pantheon, a Monastery, Swift Sphere. What else is good in here? This is hilarious.
But actually, those were bad. When I retuned the deck.
Well, they look pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah, like even in the two drops, like I made it more controllish, and I've been playing it on Modo. I won a two man earlier, and then got
wait, you're
close.
Playing, you're actually just playing a singleton deck on Modo, or are you at least yeah. like.
I seriously want to go to another GP with the singleton
Soul
deck.
Soul of Chandelier.
That card is actually pretty good. and a Scuttling Doom Engine is when you.
Well,
when
Scuttling
you,
Doom Engine's good.
When you Ajani it and then it dies, you get lifelink and.
Okay.
You're finding all kinds of interactions, man.
It's like EDH. It's weird. It's like, oh man, it's weird because.
You never know what your deck's gonna give you.
Yeah, but you have answers for everything. You know, you got a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It works out. Like I seriously want to go to another GP with a singleton list at some point. And if I could take this list and 4-0 a daily or at least 3-1 a daily, then.
Who is it that does that? Is that Frank Karsten that'll take singleton lists places? I feel like there's a pro out of Europe that does that. And I
this
want
is,
to say.
This is so awesome. Karsten. The lands were one of you guys.
Even the basics?
Not the basics.
No. The rest of them are.
It's because Marcel doesn't own Magic cards. I'm so happy. Like, really, nobody in the Conley Woods house could lend you a deck.
Well,
they could have.
No, they had. They were all pretty tight. And Arthur Halovich, he told me after the fact. Oh yeah, I got this Abs and Whip deck that you could borrow. I was like, oh great. But you know, I think I had more fun with the singleton. If not, but I was able to play the Abs and Whip deck for on some side events, and I won a box.
You did better than 50%.
Abs on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of them was a opponent didn't show up was one of the matches. And then I got to play this kid, James. He was actually having a bad time, but then he just demolished me with his deck. So it was pretty good. That was the one opponent that didn't show up, but I won 4 legitimate matches against like real decks. So, and like my last round opponent, he looked at the deck and he's like, I can't believe I lost this. I just feel so bad. Why did you show me this?
Yeah. Oh, you did that to everybody too? You want to talk about the Master of Soul?
I still had all
oh,
those.
Oh my goodness.
No, I would.
No.
He played a single
deck. No, like Marcel just gets done with every match and just turns his deck over, slams it, and spreads it.
They
like,
have to know, Ryan, okay?
Oh,
no,
my
they
God.
Don't. Oh, man.
You gotta know.
Oh, no. That's a heartbreak. Like, why
would you play singleton if not for the recognition? Force them to recognize you.
That's like doing their mom, but then making them smell your fingers. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Is it exactly like
it's
that?
It's exactly like that.
It's demoralizing. Precisely. There was like one person that was actually ecstatic about it, and everyone else did not like knowing that it was a
single. Well, like, if I was like X1 and you beat me, I would be real upset. But by the time I'm like X3, who cares, man? Let's have fun.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
I mean, I can see that, but at the same time, like.
I know.
I just want to sleep. I'm going to tell somebody, like, hey, I want to play FNM next week. I need you to put together a standard list for me. And then I'm just going to send this to them.
That seems fine. I mean, and, like, that's what that deck's meant for, an FNM.
Or a
I don't know, man. I only got one copy of Brymas. Yeah, that's perfect.
You're in.
That's all I need, bro. Oh,
hey, Brymas makes a difference online. Brymas makes such a difference. Oh, but speaking of the High Sentinel of Asrin, it looks like I'm gonna have to be given
a ration. Sure.
Whatever. Who cares? I don't know.
The High Sentinel of Obzon.
The High Sentinel of FOGO. That's how I know it as, because I'm gonna be coughing up some FOGO. But I was able to go to FOGO for the first time.
I've never been.
It's good. It's overhyped, definitely. It's completely overhyped.
Oh yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah,
but you get something called the meat sweats, and I'd never gotten the meat sweats.
You do get those. Those are real things.
It depends if you don't know how to
force
yourself.
30 years old,
yourself,
went
right.
through 30 Thanksgivings, never got meat sweats on poultry. It's something that only happens on too much beef.
Interesting.
And we will be doing it. I can't wait till we can cash in this FOGO bet. It's gonna
well, be one good. Day, one day Marcel will buy me the FOGO he owes me.
I owe you FOGO for what?
He FOGOs you?
When, I'm sorry, Ryan, buys me the FOGO he owes me.
Yeah, that's fine. You see, you have to actually
there's
show
like
up
a
to
FOGO
an event
web.
For
Corbin. Someone
I will buy you FOGO when you make it to a Grand Prix.
Oh, but that pineapple, man. That pineapple.
We've just been at different Grand Prix. I've been at several in the past few
months. It's Grand Prix.
But we gotta do it in Vegas. Vegas, let's go. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a Churrascaria in Vegas that's worth it. So, like, we've been talking about FOGO bets for 2 years. Vegas this year, it's happening. We are going to FOGO, and we are going to faux pay off our bets.
I have to find a way to make magic a...
Wait, Corbin, you owe me FOGO too.
Yes, Ryan, that was the joke. I'm glad you just now got it.
Yeah, well, see, it's been so long, I totally forgot to think about that again. Ugh.
See, there's people that don't know that what FOGO is. Kevy actually was saying, "Oh, I had no idea what FOGO was until now that you put the pictures up." So everyone out there, if you don't know, this is a Brazilian grill house, and you can find several different variations of this. But basically, the waiters come around with grilled meat. And they'll slice it for you on order until you tell them to stop. And then they got like a salad bar and other stuff. And there's some pretty good stuff there.
The salad bar is what we call in the business negative EV.
No, it's positive.
Yeah,
it
helps. Fine.
You got to balance out the meats. And there's actually, they had like some prosciutto.
I balance out the meat with some more meat.
I bet you do.
Oh,
who saw that joke coming?
You knew it was
Nobody knew. Nobody knew. Anyways. Yeah.
You win.
Oh, I get it. Ryan was making a pun.
No, I was making a screaming eagle joke.
I think it was a double entendre, really.
Either way.
Oh, I got a couple of shout outs to Izzy and Luke. They listen to the cast, and they're from Denver out there, so shout out to them.
Anyone who listens to our podcast will be getting a shout
gets
out.
A shout out.
Don't
That's
let
probably
know.
Everybody who listens after last week. Because as you guys know, I alienated half of our listeners.
Yeah, you pissed off some people yet last week, Jason. I don't know, man. You might have to apologize and throw in the towel. We might have to retire you because you're just too inflammatory.
I'll just never go to a GP in Oklahoma City, that's for sure.
Well, that's probably a safe bet, really.
You ain't from around here, are you, boy? You guys hear banjo music, or is that just me?
Oh, I love banjo music. Oh.
Oh, that was perfect.
Kidding. No, the modern GP, the GP here next year is modern, which is actually really awesome.
Oh,
I'm pretty excited for it. Well, yeah, we have last year was our first ever one, and we have another one coming back in either, I think it's like September or October, November, sometime around then.
Oh, yeah.
They have a basketball team. Why would they come back?
And you got indoor plumbing? Wow, Oklahoma's really moving up.
If there's one thing that doesn't get old after 130 episodes, it's Oklahoma jokes.
You know what else doesn't get old?
Oklahoma.
Finance 101. People come back for the Finance 101, and do we even have a Finance 101 for this week? Let's do it.
I thought you, after you said it like that, you had something ready to go.
Yeah.
No, clearly not.
No.
Finance 101. Let's talk about people, if you're trying to move from, you know, hey, I'm at my F&M, I hear there's a Grand Prix coming along. You know, how do I kind of make that transition? So, you know, we've all done a lot of Grand Prix. Marcel, you just came from one. How do you kind of plan for that and, you know, look for rooms, places to stay, you know, try to have your stuff ready so you don't spend a lot of the event? What are some tips you have for people who are trying to, you know, get to that first event?
Maximize everything to minimize your cost. If you go there by yourself, you're going to have to pay 100% of the gas, 100% of the hotel, 100% of everything. The more people you cram into your vehicle and into your hotel room, the cheaper it is. So that would be the first thing. The best EV is to take more people than you should probably have in a hotel room, and as many people as you can comfortably fit in the automobile. That would be my first tip.
That's an interesting
word. Comfortably is the key word.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
We've all done that, like seven people in a hotel room sleep on your corner of the floor.
Yep. Those are my favorite GPs, though.
Yeah,
those
it's fun.
Ones where, like, everybody has a good time. Like, it's actually a mini party in the hotel. There's all sorts of cool things.
Yeah, you automatically have a group to hang out with, and stuff's cheaper that way.
And they can't get away from you, so that's why Corbin likes them.
And we're finance people, so we get the sleep-in special called, hey, I'm not playing the main event.
Yeah. The best sleep-in special.
Yes, it is. One of the other things you can do, you know, regarding playing an event, if it's a constructed event, is invariably something will change on Friday night, no matter how prepared you think you are. So bring your extra stuff, whether that's your sideboard slots or even, you know, extra decks. Things change. I once was completely set on a deck for Grand Prix, 3 or 4 years ago. And all I know is a friend of mine named Joe Nassif came to me at like midnight on Friday. It was like, dude, Chris Van Meen and I are playing this Elsos tomorrow. You have to play it. It's so good. And I put together all of those cards, well, like 72 of them Friday night. And then I had to pay an absurd amount of money for the 3 commons I needed for my sideboard Saturday morning. So if you think you might be playing something else, bring it, because, you know, the things happen at the last minute.
And if you think somebody else might want to play something else, invariably somebody there is going to Audible and you want to be the guy that hooks them up. So definitely, like, have a binder that's got some staple commons and uncommons for the format the event is.
Absolutely. So
how do you let people know that you got those cards if you're not a dealer at a GP?
Well, a lot of times
they'll be going around the room saying, ah, "Hope, I need Wirewood symbiotes now."
Also, like a lot of times, you will go. You know, most people don't just pack up and go to a GP by themselves. They go with people from their store, and sometimes it's a small group. But a lot of times, there will be several groups, and you'll know people even if they're from your store, they're from your city, and those sort of people. So you can just sit down with them before the event, talk to them, and say, "Hey, is anybody looking for anything?" That sort of stuff always can work out. See, I wish I could remember what the particular card was I needed for that event. It was like some green creature that had like kicker and you could destroy a non-creature permanent.
Because everybody listening right now, like, just won't be able to rest until you figure that out.
Mold Shambler.
I know, right?
Mold
Shambler. Was, yeah, there you go. It was Mold Shambler. And the point was, like, this is literally like a bulk common, like a penny, but I think I paid like $1.50 a piece for them on the one dealer who had them. So you really get blown out if you have to, if that stuff starts adding up on you.
Sure, but I mean, that's your own fault for not bringing it. Like, that's the advantage from the dealer side.
Yeah.
It's such a pain to have to, like, go through and make sure you have all that stuff that I'm absolutely okay with them charging a premium at events.
No, yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but just as a player, you know, you want to try to avoid that. I mean, I certainly didn't expect Audible from whatever I was going to play to Elves at the last second, and it went all right. But
don't jam your car with 9 5K so you have every conceivable common. Like, sometimes you pay that $1.50.
Yeah.
And if you fly, because flying is going to be an option for some people, and if you have to do it, you don't plan ahead, know when to go in early. If you want to do the early flight, try to minimize your layovers at different stations, and I guess hydrate, bring water.
Well, yeah, when it comes to flying,
Marcel's finance tip is drink water. Every human being will die if they don't do it every 3 days.
when it comes to flying, your options are, if you don't book your flight early, it's going to get very expensive, at which point you're better off, like, either you book your flight early and you get a reasonable price, or you book your flight at the last minute and do like a name your own price sort of deal where they have to, you know, they're just trying to fill an extra seat. If you do stuff like that on like Priceline, if you're able to give yourself a day to travel, you can save a lot of money, by doing like a name your own pricing. And that doesn't guarantee what time your flights will be at, but as long as you've given yourself, say, Thursday to get in there or something, or all day Friday even, make sure you'll be there by Friday night, you can save a lot of money that way.
Yeah, and I was able to go to a few GPs, Jersey and Denver, because, was it Ryan or Jason? They told me about the Southwest round trip deal. So if they got any deals going on and you happen to know through the grapevine, or if you're subscribed to it and you find out about the deals, you know, have a schedule of GPs ready to go. And if you wanted to go to one, or you're thinking about it, you know, wait till they have those deals till you buy your ticket, and that could save you a lot of money and a lot of costs.
Yeah. All right. Is it time to talk spoilers?
One more.
Oh, one more tip
that I learned, that if you
eat food every day.
Oh yeah.
Or you'll die.
Don't eat fast food. Don't eat fast food with liquor.
Oh, it's true. One other thing too, like if you're going to be going to an event, even just a PTQ as a player, one thing I always made sure I did was the night before, or at least the day before. Yeah, like it's tempting to go out and get that fast food, but you're probably going to have to do that the day of the event. Make sure you eat just like a good home cooked meal, like something that's going to sit in your stomach well, because you don't want to, like during the rounds the next day, be feeling sick to your stomach. Like I've had that happen before. It's always miserable.
What are you guys, Columbo?
This is where we went from a finance cast to a, let me tell you how to eat dinner.
This is event management. You're going to be at the event.
Everybody knows eat and drink good meals.
That was not it. Shut up, Corbin.
That was literally it.
Make sure both your shoes are tied. If your shoes are tied, you can step on the lace and
deodorant.
Down.
Deodorant and take a shower.
Oh, my God.
Please. No,
those ones are real.
No, don't be a butt crack.
Covering all the important stuff. Thanks, guys.
Well, here's a finance thing I learned that I spent money because if you're going to go to the event site, they may have like a shuttle. So like Denver, they were at the Crown Regency or the Crown Royal or some shit like that.
I bet it's the Crown Royal. I bet that's the name of the hotel.
Crown Plaza. There we go. But from the airport, there would have been a shuttle that I could have took there for free. Ended up spending like $25 on a cab, so you know, finance tip right there. See if you could get a shuttle from the airport. Bam.
Or Uber if you don't want to take a cab.
Well, that's what I use. I use Lyft, which is the same.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But it's pretty much about the same, roughly.
Yeah. All right. Can we talk spoilers?
Why spoilers?
Monastery Mentor. Mentor.
Oh, okay. Wow. Who knows how to feel about this card?
Okay, Monastery Mentor is the 3-mana 2/2,
card.
2 colorless and white. It has prowess. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you put a 1/1 white monk creature token with prowess onto the battlefield. Opinions have ranged from this card's thirdly and just makes, you know, bad tokens to it's the most busted thing ever. So what do you guys think?
I've had both of those opinions.
The card is really good. I'm sorry. Anyone who says this card is thirdly is wrong.
Pretty sure this card is real good.
Yeah.
This card is real good. Yeah, like you don't have to do anything except play spells next to this card. Like, it's good for the same reason that Rabble Master is good within its own shell. I'm not saying it's Rabble Master, it belongs in a different deck. Although it will see play next to Rabble Master, I think. And I don't know. Like, we'll see
if Jeskai
adapts.
I'm not even really sure it's a different deck.
I think it's better
than
Young Pyromancer, and Young Pyromancer is good.
Yeah,
so.
This is definitely better than Young. The 3 casting cost makes it harder for Young Pyromancer.
But being in white, like Pyromancer's in red, which is the color once casting all those spells.
Yeah, but you just scales because their tokens got prowess. Like, that's just insane. Like,
I mean, it's
that's
just like
nuts.
Yeah, there's certainly going to be like. Your tokens decks, like, are for sure going to be a thing again, like, with this, the red-white tokens, Cordlyn Outburst in this, and
maybe people
even...
play Irois.
No, it's not that. You know, it's
I'm
not...
just kidding.
Like, this thing, you don't have to put this in... Like, I'm playing this in blue-white as my new Eidolon of Countless Battles. Like, this card is just flat better, and it does the same... It's good in the same kind of matchups where you just, like, want to go wide, or you need to, like, just, like, overpower your opponent, but at the same time, like... This card, you don't have to target with heroic spells to make good. Like, it just, everything about this card already fits into a bunch of existing shells. That's why it's good. Not because, the card's power level itself.
It's a lot of value.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder, it feels like between Seeker of the Way, Monastery Mentor, and Soulfire Grandmaster, which is the lifelink on Instants and Sorceries we talked about last week, and Rabble Master as well, the 3. Either they're all going to go together and just form some insane red-white deck, or one of them is going to have to crowd out the others.
I think the one that gets lifelink is the worst of them.
Yeah.
If I had to choose now.
You think the uncommon is worse than the rares and the mythics?
Oh, is it uncommon? I didn't actually look.
The one that gives the spells lifelink is...
Are mythic. You talking about Soulfire Grandmaster, or are you talking about Seeker of the Way?
No, the Soulfire Grandmaster.
Oh, okay.
That guy is like, he's fine. I don't think he's going to be as impactful as people want him to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to like it, but I think it's a little more cute than good.
I'm not saying it's not a good card. I'm just saying of those cards you presented, that is the one I don't want to be playing the most.
Okay. I heard a strong argument for him in like a red-white control deck. Like, he gives the reach and it potentially of getting, you know, a rebuy on a couple cards. All of a sudden you're getting, you know, card advantage out of him that I see a lot of potential.
I think it's probably in some decks, it's certainly going to be better than Seeker of the Way.
Yeah, it depends.
Probably not in all. I mean, it does certainly lose to Seeker of the Way in combat.
I think in non-aggressive decks, that's where you're going to see him shine. And I can see that. Whereas aggressive deck, I don't know. Yeah, I think Seeker of the Way is more where you want to be because Seeker of the Way is just such a beast.
Yeah,
but against it this weekend, I just, you know, I really see how good that card is.
Grandmaster doesn't trade with a full Hordling Outburst where a Seeker the way usually will. If, right. You know, it goes that way, like.
The so advantage like if, is that it always has lifelink, right? So.
Right. I mean, the disadvantage that. Is that it, like, when do you get to attack or block with it? In the, obviously we're thinking like in the mirror sort of way, but just.
Yeah.
If the Seeker, it feels like Seeker the way may be more flexible, but this is certainly better in any deck wanting to go longer.
Yeah. I just don't see this card, like, I see it as a 2-2 with lifelink. Like, the Instance of Sorcerer thing is cute, but like, you're going to play those cards anyway. It's not like this card suddenly makes a whole bunch of other cards playable.
Well, I think that's the point, really.
Right, but I mean, like, you're there. The I guess what I'm trying to say is like the deck is already winning without giving those cards lifelink. So you're not really like I don't feel like it's doing enough to warrant playing the card.
Yeah,
I mean, more cute than good.
I honestly don't have an opinion. Like, I honestly can see arguments for both. So I don't know without testing between this and Seeker the way which is better because like. You can just see so many different scenarios for both. Yeah,
I mean, we can all agree that, like, in a vacuum too.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we can all agree, like, the instant sorcery part. Like, there will be times when it's relevant, but as far as what you want your two drop to do, like, that part is the least relevant of all of it. it's so late game. Like, yeah, like the coolest part about it is like getting your Stokes back.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, and
but like paying six mana for a lightning strike is fine.
If you build the like the red-white control deck sort of thing, I think it fits a lot better because in that case you actually are fine trading it off as a 2-2 early because your other ones are going to be so good. Whereas like the Jeskai deck that kind of wants to like tempo people out and force through damage and then finish it off with burn spells probably wants a Seeker of the way so they can actually get in for damage.
Yeah, I guess that's the way I'm looking at it is like the more already pre-established Jeskai deck. Right. I mean, I guess if you do have a control deck, but the problem is you're going to be running, like, End Hostilities in that deck, and I don't feel like this card is great in a deck that's running End Hostilities. Like, I feel like you're going for a more – you have so many Planeswalkers and, like, other good permanents. Like, I might even prefer to play one of the Sieges over this card in that kind of deck.
It's an early drop, and then, you know, you can stabilize some stuff on the board, and if you get a couple spells in or some life, like, you know, that extra life on top of slowing down creatures or, you know, trading off or – jump blocking, but still getting the life. Like, I could see it fit in there.
Yeah, I mean, you can, like, play it on turn two, trade with something, gain some life to keep you going. End Hostilities on five, like, slam this on six with a spell. Like,
yeah.
There's lots of ways it can work. All right.
I'm excited. Hold on. I want to talk about, is there going to be a warrior deck? Because this Brutal Horde Chief, this card is spicy. That's the black, Hell Rider.
It's a super Hell Rider, right? Kind of.
Well, it goes really good with, you know, Mentor of, Monastery Mentor making all those tokens. There you go.
That is
so
true.
The Brutal Horde Chief is the mythic three colorless black 3/3. Whenever a creature you control attacks, if any player loses life and you gain a life, and then for three colorless and then hybrid red, white, creatures your opponents control block this turn if able and you choose how they block.
Master Warcraft! Master Warcraft is a card that wins EDH games just because you're like, all your dudes block my 1/1 and everything else gets through. That sucks. Why would you do that?
And you can say you got the Warriors deck, you know, they're just aggressive and they got a pretty good curve. They got those good two drops, a couple other creatures. I mean, this would be a good 4 and then a 5. You could just win the game.
And there's there's a 1/1 for 1, I think, that also has that trigger. They take a damage when it attacks.
Yeah, they lose a life.
They don't lose. Is it they lose a life or they take a damage? Because it's lose a life on the Horde Chief.
It's lose a life. Yeah.
Mardu's Shadow Spear.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
And this has, you know, it gets compared to Hellrider because the ability is similar. I mean, Hellrider could attack immediately. So, like, the turn you played it on turn 4, it by itself represented 4 damage plus all of your other creatures pinging. This does not have haste. However, all your other creatures will ping if you make it to an attack step with it. So, I don't know, it's real strong. If the ability is incredibly powerful if there's a deck that can fit around it.
I think both those abilities are really powerful, and I think let's not understate that Master Warcraft, because that's gonna be really miserable.
Oh yeah.
Can't deal with that. And they get to have their way with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's basically like, assuming you play it on turn 4, you get poked through some damage, and if you have a couple guys left, and you get on tap with it, like, you probably win the game that turn just by activating it.
This is true, especially if you had, say, Mardu Strike Leader, which is a 2 and a black for a 3/2, and whenever Mardu Strike Leader attacks, put a 2/1 black warrior token into the battlefield. and also has dash for a 3 and a black. So if you play this on 4, you know, 3, if you play, Blade, Champion of the Blade, or the one that busts all the warrior creatures, and then you got a 1 drop with the Death Touch, and then you play your Hell Rider, you got your 1-2-3-4 curve, and 5, you could just take over the game.
Blood-Soaked Emissary, is that the Blood-Soaked Champion?
Can we talk about a card that's a little less obvious, and I actually want to hear what you guys have to say?
Sure. Okay.
How about the new Figure of Destiny in green?
Card's terrible.
It's okay. It's not as
Corbin,
good as...
Corbin likes to read cards, so let's let Corbin read the card.
Yeah, we're talking about Warden of the First Street, so 1-drop, 1-1, mythic. 1 colorless, black-white hybrid. It becomes a human warrior, 3-3. 2 colorless, black-white. If it's a warrior, it becomes a human spirit warrior with trample and lifelink. And then for 3 colorless and then 3 hybrid, if it's a spirit, you put 5-1-1 counters on it. So you can activate it at instant speed, which is obviously very good. I don't know if there's a deck it fits into, though.
Well, isn't Obs and Aggro kind of a thing of late?
It is.
Yeah.
I was really down on this card on QS, and a lot of people told me, like, I was wrong to be down on this card, and I don't...
Obs on Aggro is good. The thing is...
This is a one-drop.
That deck taps out every turn.
Yeah, but I mean, it does, and it does tap out every turn.
But if it taps out every turn, is it emptying its hand, and therefore you'll have stuff to do with it?
I don't know. Like,
later?
If you watch that deck play, you rarely, like, you Obs on Charn for more stuff, your Planeswalkers. I don't know. You very rarely see that deck run out of cards unless you're against, like, a blue-black, in which case this guy's not any good anyways because he'll just instantly die.
But still, he's like, the Lions are such a beast in the Obs on deck. Like, this is somewhat of a Lion. If you don't have a 2-drop, you know, you can play this on 1, you can pump him up to a 3-3. And
Figure of Destiny won a lot of combats because it was a 4-4 on turn 3 when everything was smaller than that. This becomes a 3-3 on turn 2 if you're lucky, sure, or on turn 3, which is a turn when it just, like, gets blanked by Centaur's, coursers for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, this card, you have to be turn 6 before it can get past a courser. That's why I don't like
creatures
it.
Creatures are just far better now than they were when Figure of Destiny was, like, dominating standard.
This would have been worse when Figure was in standard than Figure is. Yeah. And it's certainly worse now. Like,
well,
this
Figure
card
was
is,
a Kithkin, too. Like, that
I mean,
mattered.
That's fine. It got played in plenty of decks where Kithkin didn't matter. This card, it doesn't have a subtype. It's just human.
Yep.
Initially, yeah.
Yeah. Because it gets all the other stuff added.
Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense. It just looked really funny for templating. I'm like, where's the subtype? But yeah, like, it's... Even if the second ability costs 3 and the third ability costs 5, I still wouldn't like this card. So, like, I feel like all the abilities are overcosted for what they could be to aggressively make this a mythic in the first place.
This is a $10 pre-order.
Yeah, that's way too much.
Like, where do we see this going? No. Like,
This is a dollar bulk mythic.
This is a dollar
bulk mythic. This card is not good.
I would say like three or four bucks.
I agree with Ryan just as he said that about Boros Reckoner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. Boros Reckoner, I was wrong about this card. If this card sees a large amount of standard play, I will eat something of your choice.
Oh, that's like dangerous to say to Jason.
I mean, that's fine. The card's not good. I'm not worried about it.
All right,
biggest knock against it is that creatures are better than they were 5-6 years ago when Figure of Destiny was in.
And I think this is less good than Figure of Destiny, and like it's being compared to it. Like, this is just Painseer all over again.
Right.
It's being compared to a card that was good for its time and place, and like it isn't quite as good.
Yeah. If this card made it like a 5-5 with the second ability and gave it Spirit or Trample or Lifelink, and the third ability gave it the other one, then I might like it more. But like the fact that you have to get the 6 mana to make it more than a 5, more than a 3-3 makes it bad.
Yeah.
I really hope I'm not listening to this in 3 months when this is a $25 card and just cringing at everything we're saying about it.
I hope so too. But like I have like I said, if I'm wrong at this one, then clearly I just don't understand Magic. I'm done. I'm fucking out. Like Boros Reckoner, I realize
his professional reputation on his interpretation of this card.
Marcel, what do you think?
It's being unfairly compared to Figure Destiny because it's not nearly as good as Figure Destiny, but I still think it has a place and it won't be a bulk, but I can see like a $3 card.
3 to 5? All right.
That's fair. I can see, yeah.
I think
that. What I do am interested, I saw a lot of the chatter about, is this reality shift, which is one in a blue.
This is the best removal spell I've ever seen in mono blue in my entire life.
It's better than Pongify because it exiles.
I don't know if it's better than Pongify, because Pongify did cool tricks with like the Ossus too. So.
Yeah, but exiling is really good. Yeah, okay. Exiling is a lot of things. The thing with Pongify that was a problem is that they could regenerate and they'll still get the token, or they could make it destructible.
Is this a Merfolk card?
Ooh.
Reality Shift, one colorless blue, exile target creature. Its controller manifests the top card of his or her library. I think we might have a Merfolk card.
God, you could randomly screw them out of like a one of. I would love to like just hit somebody with this in Legacy and get their one Batterskull. Watch them flip the table.
Well, it's target. Oh, you mean when you flip it?
Yeah.
Because they can't turn it up.
This just might be a Merfolk card, you guys.
Uh-oh. I mean, it's
everything
certainly
the Merfolk card with you.
It's certainly not a bad card. I want to actually like. I know everyone's looking at this like doing this to their opponent stuff. With all the stuff that like manifests the top card of your library.
That's why it's a Merfolk card.
I really want to play Congregation at Dawn with Emrakul in Modern. That was what I was talking about earlier. I understand it's bad, but I really want it to happen.
I want face down Lord of Atlantis to flip up when someone tries to remove one of my creatures.
I just want to put an Emrakul face down and then cloud shift it. That's all I'm asking.
It seems very similar to Path to Exile, where you get a very powerful effect, exile on both of them, and then the secondary effect is not necessarily overpowered in that block. Because like giving somebody landfall and Shards of Alara was actually relevant. However, once you expand it to like Modern, where that's not a thing, it becomes an insanely powerful card. This seems similar.
I think Manifest will be even more powerful in internal formats, though. You know, they could flip over the powerful creatures.
Maybe, but, like, most of the powerful creatures are not going to be able to... Like, if you put a Grizzlebrand face down, they're never turning that face off.
That is true.
There's better ways to cheat stuff into play.
I'm not saying what you're going to do. I'm saying against your opponents. By doing against your opponents, there's a high probability that you'll flip something over that's a benefit for them more. You know,
and how good is exile right now in standard with everyone whipping their shit back at you?
Yeah.
Like exiling stuff, it's that much better than Pongify because A, the creature is a 2/2 instead of a 3/3, which is like whatever, but B, you're exiling it.
I see this in modern being, at least a Merfolk, being a possible, I don't know that you want to main deck this over like Vapor Snag, but like it's a way to deal with things that were hard to deal with before.
Okay, so
and that's where it fills a niche.
So here's the deal. People don't necessarily care what we think about in terms of playability. What they want to hear us say is, this is an uncommon that could be worth money. You'll probably be able to get them for, you know, pretty much nothing. This will be draft chaff. It could be a while before this goes up. I think foils of this are a good play. Out of the cards spoiled, this is one uncommon. There's one other uncommon that I'm actually really excited about and think could be worth money and think you should make a play for the foils of.
Which would be what, Jason? Please let us know.
Do you guys know the card I mean?
Neutralizing Blast.
That was my guess, too.
I don't know the name of the card. It's the guy where you draw two cards and give it back to your opponent.
No.
Oh, the Humble Defector.
I thought you said a blue uncommon. I was saying
a Neutralizing Blast.
I'll cut that in better.
It's fine. Talk about your commander card.
Yeah. You don't get to change shit when you go fuck up. Yeah, no.
I just didn't know the name of the card. Humble Defector is it's a one colorless and a red for a 2/1. You tap it, and the ability is draw two cards. Your target opponent gains control of Humble Defector. Play this ability only on your turn.
Are you talking about for EDH? Is this the EDH card only, Jason?
No, this combos with Jeskai Ascendancy.
What do you mean? Talk to us. Tell us how does this
work. Oh.
Okay, so what you're going to do is, now this doesn't combo with Jeskai Ascendancy as well as it could in an ideal universe where Wizards hates everybody. What happens is the line of text that says draw two cards also says they gain control of it. So you're going to have to put multiple instances on the stack with Jeskai Ascendancy. So what you'll do is you'll tap this, put its ability on the stack, don't let it resolve, retain priority, play an instant, trigger Jeskai Ascendancy, untap it, tap it again, put another instance of draw two cards, they gain control of it, on the stack, As long as you have instants, you keep doing that, and then you draw a big pile of cards. What you can't do is do this with an empty hand and be like, all right, I'll draw a Gitaxian Probe and a Gut Shot. I'll play that, untap him, draw two more cards. You can't do that. But what you can do is put a bunch of instances on the stack. So your hand's going to need to be relatively full before you use this. But what I've seen people suggest is, why don't you just get it back with Daring Thief or Retraction Helix or something like that. So that's worth mentioning too. But you can't just like tap, draw cards, use those cards to untap it. You'll have to have a relatively full grip before you start doing shenanigans. But even if you're like tap, you know, Gut Shot, untap him, tap him, and then they gain control and you drew four cards off of him and they've got a, you know, a creature that they can only use that tap ability on their turn. You're pretty good in those ascendancy decks. So I don't know if the modern version needs a retool, because that's got better cheap cantrips. You're playing like crap like Cerulean Wisps in the modern version. You know, with the Fate Stitcher and the Fairy Conclave, I don't know if it needs the help, but I think definitely the standard version benefits from this, especially if you, you know, have some cheap cards to keep on tapping him. And you know, you could draw 2, 4, 6, 8 cards and maybe just Daring Thief him or Retraction Helix him back so they don't get the benefit. This card doesn't really seem all that great anywhere else, but I think the foils will probably be pretty cheap. So I think if you can, if they end up cheap initially, make a play for them, because this could be, you know, something that's worth money.
I honestly just because thought, of that pairing. I thought you were going to talk about it being some sort of EDH group hug card, and I was going to be like,
I would think so. Like, you can, why? If you have any kind of politics,
because
you can
it is, man. People like to do this crap in Commander, and
you could be
I'm
like,
not
I'm gonna,
one of them.
You could be like, I'm going to trade you my guy. You can draw two cards and give it back to me. We could do some kind of politics so that you could bolster someone to make him your ally, I guess. Right. I don't know EDH. Does this happen in EDH?
Nah, that is like, a thing. Political shit thing. Does happen like that. Like, I mean, this could be fine for that, but in red, I don't know. I think you want to be stealing their creatures in a red EDH deck.
I mean, given an ally the possibility to draw two cards is a strong political thing, I would think.
And they give it back to you. Yeah. Seems fine. But that's not what I was thinking about it for, because like EDH does not drive the price of in-print uncommons.
Well, foils.
Well, that's why you said foils, so.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I did say foils.
So what about supplant form? This is the Ford and blue for the instant. Return target creature to owner's hand.
It's the most expensive and probably the worst. Like, Faded Infatuation's 3 mana.
What was that? What did that do?
Exactly. You don't even know what it does.
I don't. Tell me.
It makes a copy and then you scry or some shit. I don't even know.
Yeah, but this bounces a creature.
I know what it does. I'm just saying.
I mean, it...
Alright. Well, I was just wondering, if I was going to see something, it would be EDH, and I was wondering if this would be an EDH thing.
I think you want to play Rite of Replication in EDH. Like, Rite of Replication's the gold standard. I don't know if there are other spells that get played to do this kind of thing, but like, for 6 mana, man, I want 5 Frost Titans. You know? So I don't know, I don't even know. This could get played in EDH. The bounce is relevant, but...
It's a lot of mana.
A lot of mana.
All right, cool. That's what I was looking for.
But it could be cool for getting 2 triggers off something with a come into play ability. You know, something like Avalanche Rider or, you know, I don't know. That could be cool. But that seems cute.
Dirtily.
And as much as EDH is a cute format, like the kind of cute I want to be doing is making 5 copies of Consecrated Sphinx. You know, not 1 copy of Consecrated Sphinx.
Well, I'll tell you what's not cute, though, is the Shaman of the Great Run or the Great Hunt. I think this one is pretty badass. It costs a 3 colorless and a red for a human, for Orc Shaman. It has haste. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, put a 1/1 counter on it, and it has ferocious. Pay 2 and a Simic. Draw a card for each creature you control or power 4 or greater. Like, this card has a lot going on. Besides,
worst case scenario, it's a treasure trove on a stick, I guess.
Yeah, it beat down. You could get a treasure trove on it. I mean, it is 4/2, so it's a little fragile with the 2 toughness, but I mean, it's got haste, and it makes your other its ability, you don't even have to attack with it. There's other creatures.
Like on turn 4, you can play it and swing right into the Corsair of Kruphix that they played on turn 3?
Yeah, or you could have your other creatures go into attacking it. But I mean, at the same time, you're drawing cards, so like, in those type of decks, aggressive decks, the ability to draw cards or multiple cards, I think there's a lot that could just be nuts. Like, you know, anytime you see, you know, the ability to get more than two cards a turn by paying for a mana, that's something to look at.
It's kind of a win more though, isn't it? Like, you draw, when you have lots of ferocious creatures, you're drawing lots of cards. What do you need cards for at that point? Like, it's a win more.
If you have two creatures, you're one creature's okay, but having two.
Drawing two cards for four mana is fine, yeah. It's, having an inspiration on a stick's pretty good.
Okay.
I will grant you that.
I think this card is better than just that. I think it's a really good card. It's going to be an impact on Standard.
I'm more or less on Jason's side, I think. I don't know, it's not bad, but we just talked about, like, the Mardu Horde Chief. Like, there's only so many things that... Four drop in a deck that would want either of these aggressive cards. I mean, I don't know if you can play two four drops in that deck.
I wouldn't put them in the same deck.
Well, I mean, I would argue that chances are one of them is just simply better.
I think they're two completely different decks. I think the Horde Chief goes into a warrior deck where this you can put in a teamer or something.
Sure. I guess. Yeah, like with a Knuckleblade type deck, I guess.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, it is not a deck right now. Cause, yeah, Knuckleblade's not seeing any play. Yeah, Knuckleblade, this, if you had the, what's that?
I mean, Knuckleblade, Teamer put copies into day two in Denver and Manila. I mean, it is a deck in that sense. I don't know.
It's just like there's an unfair deck or two right now with Theros cards, and like, I think Knuckleblade and its ilk will be better when people are hopefully playing more fair post-rotation, but we'll see. It's sometimes the cards are like, oh, well, after rotation, and then, like, there'll be something after rotation that also invalidates it.
Oh, so
we'll
obliterates just it, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Are there – what else? I mean, is there any other cards you guys want to talk about?
Ryan, what about Shu Yun? Is that anything good for a blue-white deck? Or is that double strike?
Excuse me. I wrote an article about Shu Yun. Why also, is he doing it?
Oh my god.
Hold on. For what it's worth, Shaman of the Great Hunt.
Sorry.
No. Shu Yun I liked a lot until the monastery guy came out. The one that makes the monk tokens. Like, that guy is just probably much better. Cause you can only fit so many, like, three drops in that deck. I'm only running, well, I think three right now total.
Gotcha.
So, but beyond that, I think that Marcel's correct with the Shaman of the Great Hunt. I think that guy's probably better, mainly because of the word haste. That guy's fine, like, after you get board wiped to play into, you know, an empty board and the other guy's not. But the other card I want to talk about, speaking of ferocious, is the Flamewake Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
That card, I think, is going to have a little more of an impact than most people think it's going to. Like, yep. Chandra's Phoenix always kind of just, like, snuck in there. And this card is pretty gross because you don't have to really put any extra, like, before there would be times when you would burn your opponent even though you wanted to burn the creature just to get your Phoenix back at times. And this, like, you're doing everything you want to do anyway, which is like, you're playing a Savage Knuckleblade, okay, go to combat, pay a single red, hit them with the Phoenix, stuff like that. And it's like, I feel like this card's pretty good. I don't know that if it's exactly into the way the deck plays right now, but I certainly think it's gonna start seeing some play. I think we're gonna see, like, Jeskai or probably not Jeskai, probably the Teamer deck adapting this in some way. I don't know that every version will, but there will certainly be versions that do.
There have been so many bad Phoenixes that, like, people just, like, don't even care. They, like, their eyes glaze over when they have to read another Phoenix and interpret what it's about. Like, I think there's so much, like, people don't care about Phoenixes anymore, and I think this is one to care about because I think it's quite good.
Yep, I agree.
It's gonna be tougher to trigger that ferocious than I think people are giving it credit for. I
do agree with you on that. I think you do have to build a deck around it with the four.
Yeah, that's gonna be pretty tough. It's not gonna be something you can do every turn. It's not gonna be as easy to do as it was with Chandra's Phoenix, but this is definitely the best Phoenix we've seen in a while.
Yeah. I think that, like, when you were asking about the Shun Yu, I think that entire cycle is pretty cool. I think of all the ones I've seen of that cycle so far, probably like Alicia, the one who smiles at death the most. I'm not sure that has a deck either, but I think that ability, like, anytime you're recurring things is pretty powerful. It's a 3/2 first striker anyway for three. It allows you to get back, is it power or is it?
It's power.
Back? Yeah, power.
So you get back.
So it gets back a Golgari Grave Troll, for example.
Or Ravel Masters.
Yeah. So it's cool for, it's a decent EDH general, and I think it's the first Daga colored or Mardu colored, tiny leader eligible general ever. So that's relevant too. The tiny leader people are excited about it.
It could work with Aetherios also. If that's a deck where you could just do a lot of recursion to little creatures and shit.
How do you guys feel about the whole Aetherios manifest thing?
I don't
know. I mean, everyone's just kind of like talking about because you, like, the card flips up, but they have to pay the 3 life if they want. Otherwise, you get it to your hand. Like, that's...
I would say that it is something, and I mean, I've liked all the gods anyways, because...
Isn't Aetherios worth something, though?
It's like 750. I mean, but it's been 750 for like 5-6 months. I mean, it's just they all are bottoming out. That's and Aetherios sees no standard play, and they're all long-term commanders.
Yeah, stuff. I would be getting into Aetherios at that price. There's a lot of cheaper gods.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so do we want to do picks of the week? Is there any other?
Yes, let's do picks.
It's time for the pick of the week.
Yeah, there's other cards I want to talk about, but I will save that for our actual spoiler episode.
Yeah. I want to ask you guys. Choice. I want to ask you guys about a card before we actually jump into this. I'm not sealing anybody's here. Survival of the Fittest has been bought out, in the past, week or two. It's gone from, 6 months ago, it was $30. A year ago, it was $20. Today, it's over $40. But a lot of that growth has come in the past, like, month, the past 3 weeks. Is this people speculating on an unbanning in Legacy? Do you think this is a case of like some sort of insider information, or what do you think is driving this sudden growth in Survival of the Fittest?
Has anything been spoiled with it? It's not, must be Commander, right?
I don't think Commander causes a card to spike.
Like, nope.
I mean, I imagine like this. But like, there has to be motivation behind it, right? Like, I guess I don't
the only
know
motivation the I can see. Right now. The only motivation I can see is people speculating on a Legacy unbanning.
Oh, sure. I guess it seems like a really unlikely unbanning.
Well, that's why this is so intriguing that it's been bought out.
I mean, that always happens. Like, there's always a number of cards that get bought out right before bannings on bannings, and most of the time people are wrong. Like, you just, like,
it's
somebody mentioned this on one of the forums.
It's not usually $30 cards, though.
It is a lot of times. Like, it's just not the cards, like, you only pay attention to the ones that actually hit, right? Like, nobody actually notices, and then Survival goes back down to a $15 card or $10 card or whatever it was. Wasn't it already $15, $20?
It was a $20 card, and it had grown kind of naturally to $30 over the past year, but it has, you know, since been bought out in the past.
Oh, okay. I thought the card was still like $20. I haven't kept up with
Survival. Well, right, exactly. It got up to $30 on its own, but it has been actively bought out in the last week. And that was just my question is like, what was the card we always talk about that got bought out before it got unbanned?
I mean, Bitter Blossom. There's a
No, it's Alurin.
Alurin, yep.
The card itself didn't get unbanned, but there was the judge promo.
That's the only reason I asked is because like, it's a card, like Survival's a card that sure we all know about, blah, 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 but like, there are none on TCG Player right now.
Yeah, but how
like,
many were there before? Like, well, can we more get, than zero. Did somebody buy 10 copies for $300, hoping to make it go up by $10? Like,
I don't know.
They're back online for $40 right now.
Well, yeah, there's played probably, ones.
Yeah, probably being sold
sure.
by, I don't know.
I just wanted to ask you guys to see if anyone had any thoughts on it because it's basically a random buyout.
I don't think there was an event that, other than like, I think this was an initiated event by somebody.
Alright, so let's move on. That's enough about one card. You got a pick of the week?
We're sorry, Marcel. Jeez.
I mean, you guys are going back and forth. You speculate on speculation, and that's enough.
That's what we do.
Alright.
We pontificate about speculation.
Well, I'm the train driver here, so I'm taking hold of the train.
Okay, you know what, Mr. Conductor? I think I will take us into picks of the week then, and go with mine first.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week, pick of the week, time for the pick of the week.
Have you guys noticed there's a lot of dragons in this set? There sure are a lot of dragons in this set.
Where? I didn't see any.
All over. There's a 6/4 flying double strike, trampled, all your dragons get double strike. nuttiness. Like, if you were playing Scion of the Ur-Dragon, you've got an embarrassment of cards, you know, to put in this deck. I think dragons are a real thing in EDH and casual formats. And there's a card whose price currently seems wrong to me. That card is a former bulk mythic from Return to Ravnica called Udvar Hellkite. For those of you who don't know, which is everybody probably, it's like a 6-6 flyer, and when it attacks, you put a 6-6 flying dragon token into play for each attacking dragon. It's nutty. You know, it's a big, dirtly dragon. If you look at another EDH staple from the same block, Hellkite Tyrant, the foil on Hellkite Tyrant is 4 times the non-foil price, which is what you'd expect for a card that gets a lot of play in EDH. Hellkite Tyrant's very good. You hit them, you take all their artifacts. It's amazing. Played in Duretti, you get 20 artifacts, you win. It's great. That's like a 4x multiplier on the foil. We're seeing a 2x multiplier on the foil for Udvar Hellkite. So I think not only is it due for a price correction if nothing happens, I think Udvar Hellkite is going to get played a lot more because, you know, the more people are like, oh, we've got all these cool dragons, the fact that, like, each dragon you swing with triggers it and gives you more dragon tokens, like, you're going to go over the top. Udvar Hellkite is just too cheap, and I think it's just because it was so recently a bulk mythic and it's really crept up. Most people have this in just, like, I get these in bulk because people think they're crap. It's like a $2 card. So I think Udvar Hellkite is something relatively cheap to buy into. I think the foils are definitely mispriced at a 2x, and I think that'll change. It's probably going to end up around a 3-4x just because it's an EDH dragon. So Udvar Hellkite is my pick of the week.
I think that's a really good pick.
I feel better about this one than I did last week, so let's put it that way.
I feel sure. I actually feel very good about even regular copies at like $2.50, like $2.
Yeah. So the feedback we got online was like, if you do a pick of the week and you feel like it's kind of weak, just say so. But I feel real strongly about this one. So
yeah, that's good.
Fair.
Solid.
Well, speaking of lots and lots of dragons. So, speaking of lots of dragons, I was reading an article this week by Doug Johnson on our website. The rares, the common rares. I blame you, Corbin, for that. And he was talking about how, like, the bulk rares now are kind of, I don't even know how to, like, how would you describe this in, I don't know, a short sentence? Because I feel like I'm going to explain way too much for this. Does anybody else know how to?
Well, basically, I mean, there are two classifications of bulk rares, practically.
Right.
And like, those are?
Like, yeah. Like pure shitty bulk, you know, like just pure bulk. And then there's, like, the stuff that looks like a bulk rare that isn't quite, you know, that's it's something like, TCG player is about $1, and it's not, it's still, like, 10 cents on a buy list, but it's a little bit higher in TCG mid. So it's the stuff that you don't want to ship for a dime, even though it's, like, buy listing for a dime. So it's just like those two classifications. Like, Ash Zealot is 10 cents on a buy list, and so is Labyrinth Champion, but you're not going to ship an Ash Zealot for 10 cents. That's what the article's about.
Okay. I guess I read slightly differently into, God damn it. So anyway, on the
what
topic.
What did you take away from it? Like,
I took away that he was just like kind of talking about how it felt like he was saying, like, pretty much what you said, like there's two different types of bulk, but it used to be like the same thing, like you looked at cards and like, you know, you had these cards that were never going to be played as a player and like you just pretty much just toss those away. And then you had these cards that were like, okay, maybe it's good, and you put that into your play stock. And you did the same thing with uncommons, and that's why it got me thinking about how uncommons now, like we look at all the uncommons now and like most of them aren't worth a ton, but you get a couple that like become a couple of dollars in standard. And if that can happen, you really have to look at like older uncommons. That's where it brought me to my pick of the week, which is Dragon Speaker Shaman. Because that card, like when you read it, it reads like something that would be printed as a rare nowadays almost. And so if that is true, then that means that like even with 3 printings, the card with a whole new set of, you know, cycle of dragons, this card has always carried itself at $4 to $5 anyway. With a whole new cycle of cards, I could see this being a $10 rare overnight. Or, well, uncommon, but it feels like a rare again, so. And that's like, that was my takeaway. It was really like, I felt like the card is overlooked and nobody really pays attention to it just because of what the rarity is. But I feel like that rarity means so much less because of how old it is.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
All right. Glad that makes sense to other people too and not just me, because I was pretty sure after that conversation I was just going crazy. But yeah, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. I think that it's probably going to take at least a little while. Like, I don't think this is going to be something that, like, the day of the pre-release we're going to see a huge spike. But I think as people are building these commander decks like you're talking about, and this is really going to be more of a casual thing. You're not even going to see this happen. It's not going to be something where, like, oh, suddenly a list gets posted, or, you know, it's not modern playable. It's not even legal in modern. It's not, certainly not legacy playable. It's going to be something that's going to go way under the radar. And then all of a sudden one day this is going to be a $10 card. I'm just going to go, oh, when did that happen? And
that seems, I'm just like preemptively real letting you know. Reprint risky though.
I don't think so.
There's that. The other thing I'd be concerned about is just that at $5 already, like, I'd like it a lot more if it was like, you know, a $1 uncommon we're trying to get to go to $5 rather than like a $5 card we're trying to get to go to $10.
What's the ceiling?
All right, but here's my point with this card, and this is the only reason, like, normally I would 100% agree with you, but this card has multiple times in the past been reprinted from, like, it was like $2 when I got reprinted the first time, and it immediately went back to $2. Like, it took almost no time at all. And the card is going to do the exact same thing again this time around, even if it does get reprinted. I mean, unless they put it in, like, something that's, I guess if it's in, like, a massive reprint, sure. But it hasn't been reprinted in, like, 3 years now, something like that. And the price has almost tripled from what it was when it got reprinted last time.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the card is consistently going up because there are there are a lot of people that collect dragons. There are a lot of people that want to play dragon decks. This set is really going to reinvigorate that, and it's going to get those people who already have the decks built to crush their friends with their dragon deck all of a sudden. So their buddy's going to want to build a dragon deck. And you're going to, like I said, this isn't going to be something that's going to happen at FNM. This isn't going to be something that anybody's going to actually see.
Right.
It's going to be kitchen table magic. This is going to go up.
I agree. This was always going to be a steady gainer, so.
Yeah. Only thing that concerns me is, like, yeah, you talk about what's the ceiling is, you know, we kind of see, like, we see a lot of $5 dragons. You don't really see a lot of $20 dragons, because the group of people that play them are also the group of people who don't typically sink a ton of money. So I would worry a little about the ceiling here, but I agree with you that it's absolutely something you want to at least have access to.
I think this is the kind of card, like Doubling Season, where people will sink whatever they need to in it because it ties an entire theme of their deck together. And I agree, they're not going to spend $10 to $20 on their individual dragons because they can replace them with other dragons. However, there's not a whole lot of other Dragon Speaker Shamans out there.
That's a fair argument. Okay. All right, Marcel, you want to go next or you want me to?
All right, so my pick of the week is not one I feel super strongly about, but I'm still going to put out there. Genesis Hydra. This is a dollar online and almost $2, or a little less than $2 on paper. And I think, you know, with the upcoming set, if you want to play Ugin and play that in standard, there's a Nykdos ramp deck that you can probably get going, a Green Devotion, and I played against a couple of decks recently online, and Genesis Hydra was in there, and it was a powerful part of the deck, and I think the card's underrepresented. It's a very powerful card. It just probably needs the right thing, and at a dollar, I think you can see that double up, triple up potentially. Yeah.
This will probably be a card that, like, EDH will just, like, have slowly grind up, because it's so much fun in EDH. You know, it's a Genesis Wave number 2.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite as good, but it's still a fun concept.
It is, and it potentially Nemesis Wave. Oh man.
Also known as Villainous Wealth.
Villainous Wealth, yeah. I mean, Villainous Wealth is good because you don't have to rely on building your deck to utilize it. You could just be like, whatever's in your opponent's deck, it's gonna play against him.
Yeah, the colors that it's in really hurt it in EDH though.
Yeah, I agree.
Who cares? You guys can make it happen.
Who cares about the one deck that would play it? Meh, poo-poo.
All right, I'll jump in. I've got one that was actually a recent reprint, and that's one of the reasons why I like it. It's Caged Sun. When it was printed in New Phyrexia, it was a dollar, under a dollar, and we all say, hey, look at Gauntlets of Power. This is basically like that. It's going to be really good one day. Well, the card over the next, like 2.5 years then did climb up to $4. Before it was reprinted Commander 2014. Since, obviously it dropped when that happened, but since then it's stabilized at about $3, both of them, and I think that it's not going to go lower than that. And now that it has been reprinted, it will probably be a little while before we see a reprint. And there's not actually as – there's not a ton of the Commander 2014 ones on TCG Player. So it tells me that a lot of people are holding on to them rather than flipping them. So in the end, I think that this is something that goes back to being a steady gainer. You know, again, it took – you know, it took 2.5 years for this card to quadruple up, which in some cards we see overnight these days. But, you know, it was a very easy call at a dollar to go up to $3 or $4 eventually, and it did. And I think back down at $3, it's still a good call to continue that growth and start climbing back up. Because we see with Gauntlets of Power how expensive this stuff can be. So, yeah, that's my pick.
Yeah, we got to, you know, we called that at like 75 cents when New Phyrexia was out.
Yeah, that was a real easy call then, and I think it's now that we've seen the bottom, we're back to an easy call.
There you go. I think we're at that time. We're going to turn into pumpkins in a couple minutes. So let's get out of here. Tune in next week for your regular scheduled VAT program. In the meantime, you listen to the cool music because we...
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.